Thank you for having me. Thank you for wanting to know a little bit of my story. Even as I start, there's a part inside of me that comes up and it says, "Oh God, are you going to talk about this again?" So that's an inner child for me that comes up and says, "I'm so tired of hearing about what happened to us." So, and it's interesting. As I speak nowadays, because of ACA and other things that I've done through coming into ACA, I'm getting to know the inner family really well. And when I'm in a hijack. But I'll start somewhere from the beginning. I came into ACA originally in 2016, in Sydney. It was a face-to-face meeting. And I came in because I was in another dysfunctional relationship with an alcoholic. And I would love to say that, oh, I was only 25, but I was 46. And this had been a long history of being in relationships with varying, I do like to mix it up, alcoholics, addicts, whoever they were. They were always addicted to something else. So they were unavailable, always unavailable, and definitely emotionally unavailable, which of course mirrored my childhood, but it was also my attachment style. Don't be too available because I won't know what to do with you, was the unconscious programming. So I came in, I noticed I was surrounded, I loved the big book. They read from the big book. But I noticed there was a weird energy in the room and I didn't like it. And the energy in the room, which I later understood, was because I had come from Al-Anon. I've been in Al-Anon for 20 years. And the reason I came into Al-Anon was in my early 30s because I was in a relationship with an addict and my auntie had said to me, "Don't you know everyone in our family are alcoholics?" It had never occurred to me. I was so much in denial that even my mother, who is still an alcoholic, I didn't see her as an alcoholic. I saw her as a very erratic, abandoning, rejecting, completely either loving, over-the-top Hollywood star. Or an abandoning woman who just moved overseas whenever she felt the need, which meant that I was abandoned and rejected a lot throughout my childhood because she would just leave, literally just leave. So it wasn't just emotionally unavailable, she was actually physically unavailable. So, and that started very early, around 8, 9 years old. She left for 5 years originally. So when I was in another relationship, I went into Al-Anon and I loved it. I loved the steps and I felt like for the first time my nervous system relaxed. I was with kind people. There were people that annoyed me. There were people that I didn't know, I would have never befriended had it not been for Al-Anon. But I loved, and it really fed what I understand now, the 9-year-old in me who loved going to church because they talked about God. I didn't have a problem with God. I went to a Catholic primary school, and it was the only place in my life that was consistent, stable, predictable, and kind. And so when everything was going very badly at home, I used to go into church and I hop on my knees and pray to Mary. And I don't wish to trigger anyone, but for me, now I understand Mary is a mother. My mother had left. So Al-Anon just really, I loved it. Where for me I got stuck was being understanding of the alcoholic. Or understanding of other people. Well, I already had that really naturally. I was very understanding because I had to be understanding because my mother, from a very early age, used to hop into my bed and tell me how awful my father is and all her problems. And I was about 4 years old, and I used to cuddle my mom, and then she would eventually go back. So I was always understanding. That was just my programming. I'll be understanding. So for me, and it's not what Al-Anon says, Al-Anon doesn't say be understanding of unacceptable behavior, but all I heard was be more understanding. So that's what I did. So I stayed in relationships that were not good for me, were really abusive and very, very demeaning. But now I'm going to track back. So I came into Al-Anon, went to ACA, and the reason I ended up there was that because my mother had left, and because my father had hooked up with another woman, I was living with my father and my stepmother, and my stepmother hated me and often would talk about wishing to poison me out loud. And when I wasn't being ignored, neglected, or abused, I was fearful that she would poison my food. I also was ripped out of the school and I had to leave the probably the only comforting people in my life, which was my nan and pop. So all of a sudden, my life went very barren. But prior to that, from 0 to 3, we lived with my grandparents. And that inner child within me, and I've got to say that for me, what's really helped me is to find the one loving, nurturing memory in my system where I was loved. And so that for me is where I will lean back on when I've had EMDR. That's my safe place. It's always that person and that place. But nevertheless, what started to happen was I developed an eating disorder and I was only 9 years old. And so that progressed, and I actually had an eating disorder all the way into my 20s. When my mother eventually came back, I was very confused. I was 14 or 15 years old, and all of a sudden she was back, and I had a new stepfather, and we were moving across the country. So that's where I went. And then during that time, she decided she wanted to go back overseas. So then I had to go and live with an aunt and uncle that I didn't know. So the messages that kept coming to me were, I love you, I love you, I love you, go away. I love you, I love you, I love you, get away. Fast forward, during that time, I had been, because I was growing up, I was a teenager, I had no protective adult around. I had a very glamorous mother who sent me to a deportment school. It's like it almost feels like almost like that Cinderella sort of almost like that. I want you to look a certain way and be a certain way, and now I'm leaving you with random people. So it was very erratic. My dad was a police sergeant, but would stare at the TV when my stepmother was abusing me. So very, very confusing messages of where and who I was. I didn't actually feel like I had any self. What I did have was a belief in a higher power. Not because, particularly because of the church, but particularly because I used to go and stand outside and walk around, and I swear, and to this day it is true, I feel like I can feel the presence of God. I can feel God, I can feel nature, and I can feel that beyond all of this story, there is something good and pure. But nevertheless, when I was 17, this is when through ACA, internal family systems theory, I've got an inner baby who is left alone. I've got a 4-year-old who loves everyone and everything. I've got a 9-year-old who's very, very scared of being left and will do anything to not be left, will hang on to a relationship, will hang on to the most violent, abusive people to avoid the pain of being left, because when she was left, she thought she would die. And she's still, even to this day, I have to really grow, let her know that I'm not nine and I'm not leaving her. But it's tough. It's tough. And I'm not going to pretend that it's easy. It's not. And when I was 17, I probably became my most happiest self. I was happy. I'd moved to my fifth high school. I was popular. I had friends. I found a sense of belonging for the first time. For the first time since primary school, in kindergarten and those stages. But I also became very rebellious. And I also found that this is when my sexual promiscuity came out because of sexual abuse. Because what I do know is that when young people are sexually abused, they either shut down completely or they are overly sexual because it's a form of being loved and wanted. So, and at 18 years old, I fell pregnant. So I was living out of home. I was living with a boyfriend trying to finish school, and I was in a very violent relationship, but I knew I couldn't have an abortion because I really believed I would go to hell. The Catholicism was still in there. Abortion meant hell. There was no way around it in my 18-year-old head. I remember ringing my mother and saying, "I'm pregnant. I don't know what to do." And I remember her saying, "You made your bed, lay in it," and hung up. So that 18-year-old girl became a mother at 19. So I have a strong mother inside of me, but she's only young. So when I learn in ACA that I have to be my own loving parent, all I could think was, are you kidding me? More responsibility, more work. I can't become my own loving parent because all I see that as is just a hard life. Isn't somebody going to come along and save me? Because really deep down, I share that trait. Simultaneously, I'm scared of being abandoned, but simultaneously, I want to be taken care of. And it's not a good setup as an adult. But anyway, after a few other bad relationships, I realized that no one's coming. No one's coming, and it's up to me. So it up to me it was, and I put myself through university with two children as a single parent because I thought I can't be poor and I won't be poor. There was a part of me inside, and this is the gift from my parents. The gift was, if you don't have a good job, you're a loser, which is also an inner critic, but it pushed me. My critic pushes me. How do I know it pushes me? I get back and neck pain. How do I know my critic is alive and well? When my back and neck start aching, because it's like she's on, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? They also said that you have to have a career. And the 9-year-old inside of me said, you can't leave your babies. You have to stay. Because she was left, so I can't leave. The upside of that is I didn't leave my kids. I parented them to the best of my ability. The downside is I can't leave anyone. You can't get me off with a stick. It's funny because I actually, the only person I've ever really heard talk about that who is educated and in a similar field to me is Ingrid Clayton, who I don't know if people know her stuff, but I would highly recommend it because she talks about, as a clinical psychologist, she could never leave a relationship, even when it was violent and bad. So she would sit with clients all day, but she couldn't leave any relationship due to her own wounding. And so she knew there's something deeply flawed in me because I've got this certain persona in this way and in another way, none. So what I do know about my inner critic and what I do know about all these parts of me is that they have come alive now through ACA because I've actually taken the time and the care to get to know them. And the way they tell me they're there is they do hijacks. They take over. My 17-year-old's angry. She was pulled up by the police the other day. I'm not 17. She was pulled up by the police the other day with a siren. She gets out of the car. He says, "Can you get back in your car?" I say, "No." And he says, "I'm asking you to get back in your car." And I say, "No." So I walk to the sidewalk. He comes over to the sidewalk and I said, "Why are you pulling me over?" He said, "You went to a stop sign." I said, "No, I didn't." I said, "If I went through a stop sign, I'd plow straight into the oncoming traffic. I always stop there. I've lived there for years. I've never not stopped." So I'm arguing. So he's saying, "I'm letting you know that this has been recorded." Yeah, great, excellent. I think this is police bullying. Do you have nothing else to do? Is this why you went to the police academy to pull people over that because you think maybe they stopped, maybe they did? This is my 17-year-old. Now, in Australia, they do have guns. And there was a little part of me going, shush, shush. But what was my father? A police sergeant. So do I care about the police? No. My father did not care about me. He did not protect me. So when I see a copper, this 17-year-old comes out. Fast forward. Anyway, I copped a fine, $400, for allegedly going through a stop sign. I got back in the car and I was shaking. I was shaking and then I burst out into tears. So for me, that 17-year-old had now done the takeover. She's, because you've got to remember that she's the parent. She's the one that's the ALP, unfortunately, often she'll just come in. The 9-year-old is terrified. What the hell? And inside of there is a little baby whose nervous system is completely dysregulated. Hence the tears. And that for me today is how my body tells me what's going on. And the 54-year-old, I don't know where she went. She went, I don't know if she just ran, but she was nowhere to be seen in that scenario. Now that scenario does repeat in my life because my survival is fight, fawn. And on a good way, good day, it's fawn fight. When I know that things are really bad, I freeze and I collapse. Then I know I'm in a complete, complete hijack of wanting to die. And the truth is, I've never left relationships except for people who are incredibly violent because it was death or death. All I felt like I was choosing was death or death. Because that's how much abandonment by a mother affected me. I felt like I was going to die. And when I'm attached to somebody and I know that the situation is bad, I really genuinely feel like I'm going to die. So just for today, is I'm not dying. What I do know is that through ACA, through small groups, I found the most beneficial part of my recovery is I still go to Al-Anon because Al-Anon teaches me to get back on my side of the street, get back over there, get my eyes off whoever's in front of me. And that doesn't matter in any situation, my adult children, work situations, partners, friends. Al-Anon really teaches me back on your side of the street. I'm also a member of SLA because for me, this addiction, the addiction part was love addiction and relationship addiction and codependency. And SLA for me is where I have to be and I have to hear other love addicts, relationship addicts, and chronic codependents, how they detach. And sometimes in Al-Anon, they have a saying, detach with love or detach with an axe. Either way, detach. And so for me in Al-Anon, but more hardcore in SLA is detach. Detach, get out of there, work on yourself, detach from the person, and do no contact. No contact. My inner 9-year-old thinks that is the meanest thing you can do to another human being. It just refused to talk to them. So that for me has been very, very difficult. And there's people in this program who have said to me, oh, just get rid of them, cut them out, the end. My 9-year-old feels like if I cut them out, I'm abandoned. Even if I make the decision, she feels it the same way. And it just feels awful. So I'm not good at it. I'm really not good at it. And to this day, I'm not good at it. And I don't know if that's a gift or a flaw sometimes. I do find that in ACOA, I've come up, it hasn't been an easy ride. I won't lie. I sometimes sit in meetings. I've got the, my mum's an alcoholic. My dad was an adult child. I've got the high, and the father of my children knocked my front tooth out and gave me many black eyes. And I've got the hypervigilance when I know, when I'm in a room with alcoholics or people from NA, I'm activated. Because the hypervigilance almost moves around the room without me doing anything. It's just an extra, it's just that spidey sense of I have to identify who is safe and who is unsafe. Not that I need to do anything about it, because God forbid I leave, but this is the blessing of Zoom. Sometimes I have left meetings because I can tell that I'm just, my system doesn't feel safe. And that's how I'm reparenting today. Am I feeling safe? Am I feeling unsafe? And drop the story. Because I'm like analysis paralysis. That's my defect. And I want to understand. Let me understand. Let me ask why. Why do I feel unsafe? Why am I shaking? Why? No. A good parent just removes a child. We can ask the questions later. So that for me is why ACA has been a bit of a ride. Of course, I dated someone in ACOA. I don't recommend. I know people often say I'd love to meet somebody in program. I've given it a red hot go. Trust me. It's I think it could be a really wonderful thing. But it's just not been my experience because I am a typical Al-Anon person. I'll knock out 100 people to get to the one most dysfunctional person because that's my attachment style. Forget about secure, insecure, preoccupied, anxious, disorganized. I just want to find what I'm used to. And what I'm used to is being dismissed, abandoned, and rejected. So for me, I have to really just understand that more deeply today. I really, really do. Because it's really hijacked my life. I booked myself into what we call South Pacific private after a relationship breakup because I had a nervous breakdown. So For me, that is the essence of my disease. This body of mine, I've got an autoimmune condition. I've been diagnosed with a chronic lung condition that will have to be managed, and I've never smoked in my whole life. I've never done any drugs. I've done nothing. I'm like this squeaky clean person. And yet it's taken a toll on my body, this disease. All the traits. It's just really, really wrecked my nervous system, which then has come out in other ways. So for me today, like the health is wealth. I really, really, truly believe that. And prioritizing that is easy to say and hard to do because the self-care, which I hate that word, self-care, is hard when I actually haven't had a modeling for what that looks like, except from a very superficial level. I guess what the other thing is, my inner critic, if we go with Dick Schwartz's thing, all the parts of us have good intentions. I'm not convinced of that theory. Because their good intentions might have been good at, I don't know, 2 years old. But their strategies are really bad now. No one likes an adult tantrumer. I don't know how you guys go, but when I tantrum, it's not pretty. I've thrown things across the room. I've yelled. I've screamed. I don't do that anymore. One thing with feet the other day unconsciously, and somebody caught it and said, "Did you just stamp your feet?" I went, "Oh my God, I did." And so again, she's still in there, she's tantruming, but I just have to say, what are you feeling? What do you need? What are you feeling? What do you need? And mostly what these parts of me need is my attention. That's all. Just like a kid who's whinging or a kid who's crying, my attention. And am I worthy of my own attention? Sometimes I don't feel like I am. And sometimes I do. I'm incredibly grateful for the critic who pushed me to get educated, that pushed me to stay with my children, even when it was awful and hard and living in poverty. I'm not so grateful for the parts of my inner critic that mimic my mum, who rejects me and thinks and calls me the devil's spawn, and that I ruined her life. She had one child. I'm not grateful for that part because that can really come alive. If someone's mistreating me, weirdly, the critic is activated. I'm not happy for the part of my stepmother who wanted me dead. And so there is an inner death wish that I've really had to recently have therapy around, that I used to look at graveyards as a little girl and wish that I could just go and lie down in there. And it's not because I want to die, it's because I felt so lost, so not belonging, and so much in emotional pain, which Pete Walker talks about the abandonment malaise, which is for me a daily occurrence across my chest. One thing this program has really given me, coming back to my hypervigilance around addicts or alcoholics, is understanding for other people's stories. And patience and tolerance, like that St. Francis of Assisi prayer. I really love when I'm really judgy, critical. I will say that I've got it on my fridge, and it just helps me to come back to my heart center. I was lucky enough to be on a IFS author talk yesterday, Seth Coupled, I think his name is. I would really highly recommend. He's on lots of podcasts. He's written a book. I don't have it, but I know that when I've listened to him, that I feel like I can hear when people have done the hard work in ACA and IFS. And I actually asked him a question. I said, I have an inner baby who was left alone to scream in strangers' houses, in a stranger's house from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And I know she was left alone to cry in a dark room and just waited for her mother to come back at 6 p.m., which is a long time for 9 months old child until I went to school. And then I have an angry teenager who, when I feel the feelings of being abandoned and left or dismissed or ignored, who comes out and is so angry. And sometimes I can internalize that anger or externalize it onto somebody. I said, and these two parts seem to work together, but it doesn't make sense. And what he said was, when that shaking happens, that I know is a baby, to just completely come to my heart, come to my heart, come out of my head, be with that shaking. And he said, even rock back and forth, rock like you're holding a baby. And so rocking, and I know that for my own babies, and I know that for babies, that that's what soothes them. He said, rock that baby and then say to that angry part, you're right. It is not okay to be ignored, to be rejected, to be blamed for other people's bad behavior. You're absolutely right. Validate her, reassure her that she does know because she is right, because it's not okay. And then ask her for space. Ask her to step back. So then you can nurture that baby. And I'm telling you, in 24 hours, I've been doing that and it's working. So for me, this is the gift of ACOA. Without ACOA and without good people in this meeting, who I know, who have helped me, who have nurtured me, who have listened to my rants, I'm incredibly grateful. And through ACOA and small groups give me an opportunity to share the deep stuff that sometimes is really hard in big meetings. And IFS, I feel like for the first time, and I can share here, I am a therapist. I'm a trained professional, and none of it worked. None of it worked for me, except this, which is shocking. Shocking for me and all the money and time and energy that people spend in therapy, and I've spent, and I almost want to say this is the only work I want to do now. Because this is what's worked for me, because nothing else did. And, I'd probably be deregistered if I said that out loud. Doesn't work. Don't bother. Don't waste your money. Just do ACOA, IFS, bit of EMDR. I'm to come to meetings, the end. Like, but I don't know that's true. Maybe that's not true for everybody, but this has been true for me. And this is, I've been in therapy for now over 24 years. So I feel like I'm probably had enough experience to say that out loud. So the other thing I would say is to understand for me, my feelings and needs of all the parts. I draw my parts. I draw that baby. I draw that 4-year-old. I draw her. For me, putting it onto paper is the only way sometimes I can access. And NVC, what are they feeling? What do they need? What are they feeling? What do they need? It's almost like this repeat. What are you feeling? What do you need? And sometimes it's so simple. So simple. I want a hot chocolate. I want a piece of cake. I've had anorexia and bulimia. Cake is off the table. But now in ACOA, you want some cake? All right, we're going to get cake. And then I ask that part of me that wants to starve and is terrified of getting fat to step back. And I reassure her and I give that 4-year-old cake. And that for me is actually recovery. It sounds so simple. And I'm sure, I don't know the normal people. I don't know where they are, who they are, but I don't know them. And if I do, I probably avoid them because I can't talk and be real. And one thing is that I've masked a lot in life. And now I feel like I'm becoming real. And there's loss in becoming real because the normal friends, I'm noticing, A, I can't be around them a lot, and I don't think they want to be around me because unless it's deep and meaningful, and I definitely want to know who they are and what they're experiencing, but I am noticing a lot of people in the population are scared to go there. So it can be isolating, but in truth, am I willing to subjugate my soul now? No. Am I willing to abandon my true self now? No. And if that means I'm a bit friendless in person and those friendships drop off, it's okay. And beside that, I have all you guys. And when I looked at how many people in this meeting, I went, oh my God, who, which part of me said yes to this situation? But anyway, I'm really grateful for the opportunity and thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Vanessa, for your
No
share and
problem.
your recovery.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Please
Thank
enjoy.
you
Thank you,
so much.
Thank you,
Vanessa.
Vanessa.
Thank you,
Thank you,
Vanessa.
Vanessa.